Hello, everybody. Welcome back to For the Girls. Besides a rainy FP2, we had a beautiful race this weekend in Japan, race weekend, lots to discuss. We have started to put our audio previews and recaps on YouTube, which you can find in the description. So if you're more of a YouTube person, you can start to find our episodes there. We had such a blast with the merch launch this week. So thank you all for the kind words, the support, your orders from across the world. It really made our entire week to see all that. And we've been wearing it in the wild, and we can't wait to see you rocking it all as well. And speaking of which, we have another very exciting merch announcement coming this week. This time, a collaboration, just one piece with this boss female-founded company in LA. So stay tuned for Wednesday. With that, we'll dive in. I'm Tiggy.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Chessa. Okay, overall thoughts and takeaways from the weekend. Personally, I loved this race, even with a Red Bull 1-2, which is saying a lot because, well, I think we've all like decided that that's what's going to be happening. So I'm trying to find a new lease on life and get excited about the races. This weekend really helped. So we had a really good wheel-to-wheel action up and down the grid. We had some interesting pit strategy with, you know, tire deck being a big thing this weekend. The red flag restart is always a treat to have two restarts and see that happen again. And of course, we have our hometown hero, Yuki. But I think overall, to me, this race feels really indicative of what the rest of the season could hold in terms of drivers and teams sort of settling into their spots in the standings. We have Red Bull, we have Ferrari kind of tight on their tails, but in a solid P2, McLaren chilling out in P3, and I think we'll see a fun sort of fight for the rest of the season with Mercedes and Aston Martin in P4. And then I also am loving this narrative that we've kind of seen over the past few races of the second driver beating the first driver. Big story in Carlos and Charles there, and then Mercedes, and of course with V-Carb.
Such good points. I don't think this was the most thrilling race overall, but on individual wheel-to-wheel level, there were some great drives, some great wheel-to-wheel action from George, Alonso, both McLaren drivers, some kind of unusual overtakes, and people really fighting for every spot in the points like it was a podium, which I love to see kind of in that P4 to P8 range. The F1 TV commentator said at one point that Alonso always drives like he's driving for a win.
That's what makes him so good.
And so it was really fun to see that, but generally it seems like people kept it clean. And I am such a big fan of the Carlos resurgence here. He's podiumed in all three races he started so far this year. He's making
a redemption arc.
Yeah, he's making such a strong case for his 2025 seat right now. I love to see it. And I'm really interested and can't wait to hear Tiggy's thoughts on the George Lewis yes. dynamic and kind of the differing moods at Mercedes right now. Because in terms of what I was saying about really fighting for each spot, it felt like George is so hungry, kind of is going to put his all just to climb one spot. And sometimes Lewis just felt kind of defeated throughout the race and all weekend, like instructing them to do a different strategy, not really asking. So I'm excited to discuss all of the above.
Yeah, I think just to hit that first, I think Lewis had a very different race than George. Like he had sustained damage from Charles, and so he had like crazy horrible understeer, like couldn't even really turn the car. So I think I can understand Lewis's morale there, or lack of good morale, just given the damage and being on a different strategy and not enjoying the strategy on the hards for so long. But it is definitely an interesting dynamic that we'll discuss more. My other overall thoughts, I kind of agree with Sarah. I didn't think this race was like everything to me, but it had some really good wheel-to-wheel action, like Sarah mentioned. I thought it was so interesting how many overtakes were happening on the outside of turns.
Yeah,
like it was kind of
hard
crazy.
Way around.
Yeah, all these drivers, especially Yuki, like he had like four of them that were so good. And yeah, so many outside overtakes, which I thought was fun and daring. And the only other thing that you guys didn't mention that I want to hit on a little bit, and we'll talk in much more detail about, is Williams. Ooh. And their horrible, horrible weekend. And then this trend that just, we joked last episode about how the Alex chassis damage in Australia was kind of the first domino to fall. And I feel like we're seeing these dominoes fall and play out as the spare chassis comes back to haunt them.
The curse.
The lack of spare chassis. But we'll talk in much more detail about that. For MVPs. So for me, I just first have to give a shout out to these cherry blossoms. Like we usually don't get the Japanese race during this time of the year. And the shots from the first day of practice, my jaw was on the floor. Like every team posted one that was so beautiful. That shot kind of through the trees. Huge fan.
We love cherry blossoms. Chess and I went to college in DC where it was a huge thing every spring, and it's pretty unique to DC and Japan. So we loved it.
Yeah. My other Japanese MVP is Yuki. I think just such a good performance. He had a tough start to the race, but he climbed his way back up the field. He had amazing overtakes, like I was mentioning before, especially on the outside of drivers. Another instance of him outperforming Danny in both quali and the race. And I loved his post-race interview in Japanese, thanking the team and the fans. It was just so sweet. And I would like to petition for more post-race interviews in drivers' native languages broadcasted more widely.
I love that. I loved when we were at the Mexico GP and Checo did a whole bit in Spanish.
Yeah,
it was good to listen to
broadcasts in people's native languages. But like, I want to hear more on the ESPN F1 TV broadcasts.
Totally. I think for MVP is like, how could we not all choose Yuki? He's so polite on the team radio and complimentary of his team. It feels like he's really growing into himself. Growing into his role on the team, he's been having such a great arc. My second MVP is along the lines of mature team radio. I think Lewis was a class act this weekend when he was like, should I let George pass, like fully aware and just like consistently going for like team above self. It was good. I like to see Lewis doing that. He's very mature.
So true. There are so few drivers who would just come on the radio affirmatively to say, oh, should I let my teammate pass?
Yeah. Seriously.
I am going to say Checo. I am super happy with his performance so far this year. He's coming out strong to get that 2025 contract. It's exactly what he needs to be doing. We've said it so many times. Red Bull is never expecting him to outqualify or outperform Max, but they need him to be podiuming every race that it's possible, that there isn't kind of car damage, extenuating circumstances. And he's delivering so far. Again, with the word of caution, we've seen the past several seasons, he tends to have a great first stint of the season and then kind of really fall off in terms of performance. But in terms of contract negotiations potentially happening soon, he's putting himself in the best possible position. And then just second shout out to the Japanese fans. I absolutely love seeing this race, and just the passion for Formula One looks absolutely incredible. It seems like it must be one of the top few races in terms of kind of fan engagement, drivers loving the track, the whole thing.
The signs.
Yeah, so really cute. Good. And did you see the picture of George with the little boy wearing the shirt?
The shirt with the pose on it. Yeah.
And then the dad behind, like in the background of the picture with another picture of George. It was so cute. Yeah, for sure. Okay, how about LVPs?
For me, I have two, I think. Alpine, for one, which is a bit of an obvious one, but it's getting tough to watch. It's hard. It's almost difficult to fathom how your car can go so far backwards in the span of one offseason. I don't know if they were experimenting a bit too much or what happened, but they feel like the only team right now to have taken a really solid step back compared to last season. There's a lot of teams in the kind of back of the pack or midfield that have stayed about the same, but Alpine feels like the big standout in terms of going backwards. And then Danny, I hate to say it, I have been such a huge Danny proponent and advocate on this podcast, as we all know. And I feel
it's been a healthy debate amongst the three of us.
Many times. I feel like I'm being proven wrong a bit, and Tiggy's being proven right about kind of where we're standing in terms of 2025 prospects, his future. Granted, I think it was close to a racing incident, the first lap contact, but at the same time, so I don't think it's something where it was so obviously his fault, but at the same time, when you have a teammate that is outperforming you, those types of errors just can't be made, even if it's a first lap type error.
Especially when you're a really tenured driver. Like Daniel Ricciardo has so much
and has a lot of stock with no underlying valuation. Just kidding.
Tessa, the tables have turned for you.
Yeah.
That's so true. It's almost a mistake you expect from a much more junior driver, the kind of not seeing a driver behind you in the rearview mirrors, moving over too fast. It's something you see less from these veterans on the grid.
Totally. For my LVP, I'm unfortunately going to give it to Williams. I feel horrible for them right now. It really feels like they're in a bad headspace at the team, and both the drivers are just under a ton of pressure. It feels like it's really not a great situation, and they're not delivering accordingly. And I sort of get them potentially taking the risk to not have a spare chassis at the beginning if you're really trying to like push, but it just goes to show the consequences of that and the domino effect like we were talking about. And it's sort of the worst case scenario for them at this point. And I don't even really blame the drivers. Like, they could be delivering better. They could be, you know, performing at a different level. But at the same time, like, I just can't imagine being in that headspace and on that team with like your upgrade package being ruined on the first lap of the race after you already had to send your car back the last race and only race with one car. Like, we'll talk more about it, but yeah, it's just really tough.
It's so crazy. Like, the drivers are incredible, all of them, and they're not miracle workers. Like, the team needs to put them in the best position, like physically in the best car, but also mentally. And I think for this weekend and last weekend, Williams maybe was out for the count on both of those categories.
And I think it might make even drivers, the pressure to not commit errors and knowing that there's no spare chassis, I think almost makes it more likely that people will commit errors from the stress. Yeah. And it's like what we used to talk about a lot with Charles in 2022 when he was kind of fighting Max and he would have to overdrive and was much more error prone, kind of given that he knew that he wasn't in a good spot in the car, was already coming from behind. And I feel, yeah, it's just a bad, bad spot to be in.
So much of it is a confidence game, you know, and like to be performing at that level when the literal split second decisions matter, like being in the wrong headspace for even 2 minutes of that is really, really hard.
Yeah, I mean, for my LVPs, it's all about – I mean, I had a lot of LVPs. Stake with, like, their crazy pit stop and then retirement. Alpine, like Tiggy said. And, yeah, my big LVP is Danny. I just think he has too much at stake for him right now to not be performing. And it's not even like he's performing – he doesn't need to be performing incredibly well. Like, do we expect Danny to do podium? Absolutely not. But do we expect him to at least get points once in a while? Yeah. So I had a lot of LVPs this week. Okay, how did everyone's hot takes hold up?
Can we skip this section?
No, let's not, because I think I did a good job.
I won't let us skip this section because I'm facetious. Science podium. So it was correct. I am totally on the science glory train right now. I'm loving it. My main thing I'm really wanting to see in F1 right now is him get a top seat for 2025. I am all aboard the science train.
Okay, what's your dream seat for him, Sarah?
I feel like the past couple episodes I've been saying Mercedes, and now
even Alonso thinks that it's not attractive anymore because Aston Martin is outperforming them.
I think it's going to be Mercedes, though. The rumors are rumoring in the paddock and people have a lot to say, but looks like Carlos and Toto were talking a lot over the weekend.
I love Max's comment too, where he said, oh, Toto's saying a lot of nice things about me recently.
Toto's been very nice to me this week.
Okay. My hot take was Yuki in the points and beating Danny. Check, check.
Wow.
Way to go, Chessa. And it was McLaren podium, which, I mean, Lando started top three, so I'm going to give myself that even though he ended up in P5.
No.
All right, Tiggy, how did you do?
Horribly, but you did not get a McLaren podium, unfortunately. We can't give you that.
Next time.
I said a back-to-back non-Red Bull win, which may have been my spiciest take of all time, but they said, we'll take that and raise you a Red Bull 1-2. Thank you very much. See you next race.
Bye.
For practice, so Logan had a big crash in FP1 that caused a decent amount of damage to the front and rear. He missed FP2 while they fixed his car, but he did make it back in time for FP3, but not a fun job for the mechanics there. Max and Checo were 1-2 for FP1 and FP3 respectively. And then FP2 was super rainy, so only a handful of drivers got laps in, and most of those laps were sort of just exploratory, so not much to report there. And then quali. Chessa, why don't you take us through Q1?
Q1. Max and Checo started looking incredibly unstoppable, and it did not stop there. Alonso's upgraded Aston Martin had him also looking really good. Interestingly, the Ferraris couldn't find great pace for P1 or for Q1. And then another big news item for Q1, George had his unsafe pit release in front of Oscar. He managed to only get a 5,000 euro fine rather than a grid place penalty. So I guess as a driver who makes a ton of money, you'd rather get fined financially than with a grid plays penalty. And, you know, it was kind of a tricky situation when Oscar literally was on the radio saying, quote, very dangerous from Russell. It's a big deal because I feel like Oscar usually keeps things to himself. So,
yeah, George and Oscar had a lot of moments this weekend, including the last lap pass from George and Oscar, yeah, and some wheel to wheel action and this unsafe pit release. So they had an interesting thing going on.
To wrap up Q1, we had Stroll out, Gasly, K-Mag, Sargeant, and Joe. Neither Gasly nor Joe have made it to Q2 at all this year.
Womp womp.
So rough. For Q2, Hamilton had a standout lap. I was feeling a little bit of hope. The announcers called it his best lap of the year. And Yuki knocked Danny out of Q2, which was his third Q3 appearance in a row and means he has outqualified Daniel at every race in 2024, which is wild. So out we had Danny, Nico Hülkenberg, Bottas, Albon, and Esteban Ocon.
For Q3, so many drivers were confused on the radio about the performance of their cars, especially in relation to Max and where he was making up time. Hamilton said, "Where's that half a second?" And Alonso said, "I don't know where to find that 10th." And then Leclerc said, "Honestly, I don't get it, man." He was just not having his best day.
Everyone was just flummoxed. They're like, how does this car and this driver go so fast? And where is my pace? And like, why is it so inconsistent all the time?
I mean, I love that they're on the radio being like, how do I go as fast as Max? And like, that's the gazillion dollar question. Like, it's not a radio question. It's like a lifelong, season long.
Which just, yeah, but, and it shows you like how much they're feeling it. If they're literally like, it's almost like they can't control saying it on the radio. They're just like, what is going on here?
Wild.
In terms of the starting grid, we had Max for his fourth pole in a row for every race this season. Then Checo, Lando in P3, Sainz, Alonso, Piastri, Hamilton, Leclerc, Russell, and Tsunoda. Notably, Hamilton did outperform Russell in qualifying this weekend, so it's a good turnaround for him. And it was Checo's first front row start since Miami last year. That is a crazy, crazy,
isn't that insane
statistic.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, even better for Checo pulling out an earlier 1-2 this season without being on the front row. Good for him, man. Okay, friends, it's festival and concert season, and you know it's all about the boots this year. That's why you need to make Tecovas your number one place for festival style this spring. And don't forget to shop their seasonal and limited edition offerings, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. We love Tecovas. They have a first wear comfort, which basically means there's no break-in period. It's the best thing ever. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's really no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it to a store though, just visit tecovas.com, tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. We all need a little extra health boost sometimes, and Fleur Marché makes it easy for us to supercharge our wellness. Their botanical wellness patches have been such a fun addition to our routine. We just stick them on wherever we want. They have them for sleep, relaxation, focus, and other things. And the patch delivers ingredients to your body in a subtle but effective way, and the results last up to 12 hours. Fleur Marché also has botanical gummies and their new organic nutritional powder Green Machine. They only use the best ingredients and are tested for potency, contaminants, and heavy metals before and after production.
And one of our favorite things, we also love that the company is founded and inspired by women with the mission of helping us feel 100% every single day so that we can have full energy and crush it every day. Find your new wellness essentials at fleurmarché.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order site-wide with promo code FORTHEGIRLS at checkout. Orders over $50 also get free shipping. Go to fleurmarché, FLEURMARCHE.com. Use code FORTHEGIRLS for 20% off your first order.
Okay, let's talk about the race, our overall highlights, and of course, our radio of the week. So, the race started clean start up front with Max getting off the line, then doing really well. But then at turn three, Daniel turned in slightly as Albon was coming up the inside, which caused that collision. And he went into the tire barriers with a pretty heavy impact. That, of course, triggered a red flag where the drivers were out of their cars for a while. They were able to fix the barrier. I feel like when the barrier gets disrupted, that's like an automatic red flag because it does take kind of a long time for everyone to get it back in place. But we were treated to a lap three standing restart, which is really exciting. I love seeing or having two restarts. Like you get the butterflies twice in one weekend. So it's awesome. Great start by Checo. Max covered him off though. And they all got through pretty cleanly. And it was a rough start for Mercedes, both dropping positions because they were on the hard tires at that point.
Yeah, then Joe retired relatively early on with a gearbox issue. So we had three DNFs this race, but nothing insanely eventful in terms of highlights during the race after the restart, but lots of different tire strategies using all compounds, multiple different pit stops for different drivers, some great overtakes, like we mentioned, from people up and down the grid. So yeah, it was some good racing. We'll go through team by team because that's probably more exciting. So first up, Red Bull, which is also our radio of the week from Max, who says the car just got better and better, honestly.
Much to everyone's chagrin.
Yeah, we're like, yep, it definitely seemed to. But yeah, for Red Bull, I think it absolutely just the bounce back they were looking for. Another solid 1-2 masterclass from them. Flawless from Max. He got pole, win, fastest lap, super strong performance from Checo, like we mentioned, just continuing to do what he needs to do. And Max said that the race couldn't have been any better, which is very high praise from him because I feel like Max is always like, oh yeah, that lap could have been better. Like, could have been so true. Because he's such a perfectionist, which makes him so good. But yeah, he called Australia just a minor hiccup and called this race simply lovely, which I feel like is Max's favorite saying, those two
just
words,
lovely, simply lovely. Lovely, lovely.
But my favorite thing was, so Callum posted the trophy on his Instagram saying like bounce back ability. He was like defining the term bounce back ability. And Ruth Buscombe, the former head of strategy for Alfa Romeo, commented like, this has been a really tough drought for you guys. Like, so sorry. glad you're back, which I thought was so funny. I love that banter.
That was so great.
Iconic.
And Checo and Christian were both on the radios at the end saying they delivered well for Honda's home race between Yuki and the Honda relationship and how well Max does here. There's just a lot of great vibes in Suzuka for the Red Bull family. Checo mentioned, interestingly, he thinks he'll know within the month if he's being re-signed. We put a poll on Instagram for this to get all of your thoughts. Will Checo get re-signed, go to another team, or retire? What do you all think right now?
Well, so the poll is actually very split. I think what's winning right now is going to another team, but not by that big of a margin. And then Checo getting re-signed is number two, and then retire is number three, which I guess probably checks out. But I'm surprised how close it is.
Why would he say that? It's very cryptic and like he must – obviously he knows something that we don't know because it's about him. But I'm excited to hear within the month, and I think also Carlos will get re-signed within the month. Ooh, I'm so excited. We're going to have such a good
month. I don't know if we'll find out within a month, but I bet Checo will probably have an idea in that time frame. But I could see that announcement not coming until the summer. I think Red Bull likes to like keep their cards close to their chest sometimes and – I don't know. All teams do. So I'd be surprised if we found out this early about Checo.
I don't think he's going. I want him to go to another team. I really do because I want someone new at Red Bull, but I think he'll stay.
I guess when did we find out last year? It was Monaco. We found out that he was re-signed and that was almost an accidental leak. Like, I don't think they were intending to launch it that early, but Checo was on the hot mic saying, making the comment about how we should have waited.
I forgot about that.
Love a good hot mic.
I think he's putting himself in the best possible position. And I think in terms of how crazy the silly season is going to be with 12, 13 drivers without confirmed contracts, I think in terms of stability, that's really weighing in Checo's favor at this point. If Red Bull just wants to lock things down early while they're feeling like things are going well to put kind of Max and the team also in the best possible spot going into next year, I think that could really work in his favor of maybe the team and the organization not wanting to kind of go through all the silly season craziness, the risk that someone could not perform as well as Checo or not handle the number two spot and support Max as well. So right now, in my opinion on this changes very frequently, but right now it seems like
it's F1. It's okay. It always does.
It seems likely that he would get maybe re-signed sooner rather than later, if he is going to get re-signed, so that they have that continuity and kind of stability going into silly season. Chessa, I'm surprised you want someone else at Red Bull. What, just for excitement? Shake it up a bit?
Yeah, I'm always here for the drama. You know me.
Who do you want it to be then, if it could be anyone?
If it could literally be anyone, even if it's unrealistic, like it would be really cool to have Carlos driving at Red Bull. I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be crazy.
If you were Red Bull and you were looking at Carlos and Checo head to head for the 2025 seat, and assuming Carlos would want to go to Red Bull, be fine in that second driver's seat, who would you choose?
I'd pick Carlos for sure.
Okay, but I mean, yeah, like I think Carlos would do better than Checo in the Red Bull seat. Although if we keep seeing Checo do a 1-2, I mean, how much – you can't go up from there. That's like the best scenario for Red Bull. I think, yeah, I'd want Carlos, except for the fact that Carlos is quote-unquote hungrier than Checo is, and there's other team dynamics that would come into play there, where I think right now Checo is happy being number two to Max, which Red Bull's going to constantly have to think about. It's a conundrum that no other team has to think about because when you have a crazy world champion, I mean, I guess Mercedes thought about it when they signed George. But it's an interesting other thing to think about when you're – like you're not just signing on pure talent, you know?
Completely
agree.
Well,
that's a good segue to Ferrari. So Carlos's podium was super exciting. It continues his 100% podium streak for every race he's participated in this season, minus the one where the appendix struck. But Charles, I'm happy for him. He earned driver of the day going from P8 to P4. He actually had a strategy that paid off with the one stopper. So
finally, Ferrari on the strategy. Yeah.
His first tire stint was legendary. And Carlos was just able to pass him on fresher tires late in the race on lap 46 for the podium. So Charles did really have a great race, but Carlos was just, I think, on the better strategy, fresher tires. But I loved Charles's beautiful Jules Bianchi tribute on his helmet this weekend as well. He had a lot of nice words to say about Jules and everything. So yeah, overall, good weekend for Ferrari. A little frustrating for Charles, but happy that they got that podium. And like we said, kind of cementing this P2 so far.
I wonder, I don't want to jinx it, but I feel like my second part MVP in addition to Carlos should have been Fred Vasseur. I feel like he's kind of running
a tight.
I feel like he's running a pretty tight ship right now, just operationally and in terms of execution. Again, not to jinx it, things seem to be going much more smoothly than the past few years, and it's particularly smoothly by Ferrari standards. It feels like they're maximizing the ability of the car as opposed to holding themselves back or creating problems for themselves. So maybe the organizational change really was what they needed.
I also loved, did you guys see the pictures of Fred Vasseur? I think ESPN posted them with his chef's kiss hands. They're like, Fred Vasseur is getting more and more Italian by the day. So funny.
Let's talk about Mercedes. So we had Hamilton P9 and George P7. Unfortunately, Hamilton did pick up some of that early damage from Charles and then had massive understeer. He really couldn't get a handle on the car through any of the corners. So he said that's why he let George by. But like we talked about it, incredible team radio when he said, shall I let George by? I think overall, though, Hamilton, he wasn't happy with the strategy on the hards. He had to do a long stint and felt really powerless against everyone. Remember, he said change the strategy on the radio, and then they're like,
a command,
think about
not
it.
A question.
And it was like, yeah, I wasn't asking. But we also did see some fun Mercedes McLaren overtakes, which I think will bode well for the rest of the season. I know McLaren is in P3 right now and Mercedes is a little bit behind, but if we can see them going properly wheel to wheel throughout the rest of the season, it's very exciting. Lando had that pass of Hamilton around the outside on lap 17. George's last lap passing Oscar. So I thought it was, you know, it could have been a better weekend for them, but nothing tragic happened. So we're okay.
Yeah. Shout out to Oscar for keeping his cool. There was another hilarious meme of Oscar being like, I choose life instead of like chaos on the last lap. So he let George by.
For McLaren, they showed some promising pace throughout the weekend and during quali, but did have some trouble with race pace on Sunday. It was a bit of a bummer given how well they did at Suzuka last year with the double podium, but still a really solid points haul for the team with Lando P5, Piastri P8. They weren't thrilled with the strategy, though. Lando mentioned that he thinks Ferrari is, quote, on another level, but one thing that they can take comfort in is they have double Mercedes's points in constructors. So crazy. Even if they're stuck in P3 right now, they have a solid margin to work with.
But it's so fun to see Lando and Oscar being disappointed with that. You know, they're disappointed they're not totally up fighting with Ferrari for P2 versus being disappointed that they're finishing like P9 and P10, for example. Like, it just goes to show how different this season is for them. And the expectations have really leveled up, which I think is super exciting. For Aston Martin, so the upgrade looked good, like we said, right off the bat in quali. With regards to the rumors about Lawrence Stroll making this blockbuster offer to Adrian Newey, the team principal, Mike Crack, denied that. He said they're quite happy with their technical team already. Could be posturing. We don't know. I'm very curious if Newey was offered something big, but who knows? The other kind of movement rumor. So Alonso, I think like we said, when asked about a potential move to Mercedes, he said, quote, "Mercedes is behind us, so it doesn't feel that attractive," which is... Yikes.
It's true.
I mean, they're not that much behind. I think they're like kind of uneven playing field at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's not attractive to leave a team to go basically feel like you're on even playing field again, because it's a lot of upfront effort, cost, loss, etc. Meanwhile, though, Stroll's radio said that, quote, "It's unbelievable how bad our speed is on the straight. Like, it's a different category." So that's
so rough.
That's rough. You have like a tale of two extremes here. But he did have some really good overtakes, and Stroll had some good moments this race. So
yeah, he didn't get points, but I think he should be proud of the race he did.
He had some great overtakes. Totally agree. But that radio was wild, and the delivery of it. That was a runner up for radio of the week for sure.
Yeah, it definitely was.
It's so tough. Like I said, like drivers can be or should be allowed to be critical of their team. Like, ultimately their team is what sets them up for success or not. You know, they're all extremely talented. And it walks the fine line of constructive feedback for your team and like versus just like crapping on them and taking and being like, "It's not my problem. It's all you guys. It sucks. Like, what's the deal?" And I think Stroll walks that line quite often and quite finely. Okay, let's talk about VCARB, the big story of the weekend. Yuki, first Japanese driver in 12 years to score points at home. Like we said, he was so happy, so complimentary of the team. And he had amazing wheel-to-wheel action. He had that amazing pass of Gasly, again, on the outside. Big trend here. And even on hard tires, the announcers were stoked. They were loving Yuki's action up and down the grid. He had that same sort of pass on Ocon later in the race. But I think the big thing to talk about, besides Yuki just being a stunner all weekend, was Danny's retirement on lap one. We talked a lot about that error and how it shouldn't have happened, but the camera people panning to Liam in the VCARB garage, like standing not over Danny's shoulder, but kind of over Danny's shoulder. It was a sight to see. And I think Danny seemed relatively okay about the whole incident, like viewed it as an isolated incident that could really happen to anyone, because it's true. But it's just like another thing adding on to his pretty terrible year already. And I loved to see Liam just hanging out in there witnessing it all.
Someone DM'd us a response to that on our story. They were like, "Liam, tell us you wouldn't have done what Danny did without telling us you wouldn't have done what Danny did." Just
yeah, like, he was like
standing in the back being like,
looking vindicated.
Yuki's compliment on the radio was so great too after that pit stop was so well executed. So shout out to the team, because that's what really set him up for success and getting into the points. That was wild. It was
we have five cars
pitting all at once, some potential unsafe release problems, everyone coming out super tight, needing to wheel-on-wheel fight coming out of the pit lane. Fascinating, because teams obviously are watching all of the gaps and watching all of the timetables to make sure they're trying to pit in an optimal time to not release right into traffic. So kind of crazy that this happened with five cars at the same time.
I swear to God, I saw like two cars wide in the pit lane, and like it felt like it felt like New York traffic, where you're kind of like, who's gonna merge, who's gonna go, who has the right of way sort of situation. But Yuki did come out on top of that. It was nice to see.
And I love that Yuki was so complimentary of them, because I do feel like that was make or break for that P10 and that one point and that first Japanese driver in 12 years, you know, to score points at his home race. So that was great. For Williams, okay, lots to talk about here. We had Albon retiring on lap one. We had Logan finishing P17, which was the last of the cars that finished. But we just need to go through their world of pain right now. So
step by step, Piggy, let's go.
Yes, we're doing it domino style. The first domino, as a reminder, Albon crashing in Australia because there was no spare chassis. He was given Logan's car to race in Australia. Albon's car was sent back to the factory in the UK from Australia. The chassis was repaired. Logan raced this weekend in Suzuka in that chassis, or in that car with that chassis. And while that chassis was able to be reused, Logan had to use an old aero package since Williams only had one set of their upgrade package, just given everything that's going on right now. So then Albon was the only car running that upgrade package for the Japan race, which was largely ripped off the car on lap one due to his crash on lap one, which means they have to rebuild that upgrade package too and essentially start all over again. So now Albon's car is being sent back to the factory yet again from Japan to the UK to assess the damage. And while China isn't for 2 weeks, the team only have 1 week still to fix it though, because the car will have to be back on freight by next Monday. So yes, thank God it's not a doubleheader, but it's still like such a tight turnaround. And I'm just kind of laughing. The FIA is like, you know, all best laid plans. What's that phrase? Like all best laid plans go to waste or something like that.
Get destroyed.
With the calendar regionalization, and they're watching Williams send this car across the world like five times. So Williams' carbon footprint right now is off the charts. Which, like, we shouldn't be laughing about, but it is kind of ironic.
They're in a tough – they're in a jam.
Yeah.
And extra creds here to the logistics team and the people back at the factory. I can't imagine the amount of work they're putting in to organize this air freight, getting the required parts. There's so much that goes into it behind the scenes. So those people are probably all really working double time right now.
And speaking of, you know, Albon – DNFing in this race, who else's heart stopped when Logan was in the gravel?
Yes.
I was like, no, please. Like, no. Like, this would be so bad. And then, I mean, it's watching an F1 car reverse is novel. It's like so novel. And to see him doing it through the gravel, and then the commentators were like, I don't know if I would reverse in that spot. Yeah. And then he pulls out and his car is like all dusty and smoky. And he's like with other – I was like, this is just – could be such a disaster. But – hats off to Logan. He finished the race. The reversing worked, you know, good for him. But yeah, I think best case with this whole chassis gate debacle, whatever we want to call it, Williams scrambles to get two cars ready. But again, we'll probably have to forego most of the upgrade package for China. I think worst case scenario here, Williams will only get to China and run one car, which would be horrible. But again, it's not like they're really sacrificing that much in the points. It's different than if you're doing a 1-2 and can only do one car. But I think longer term, this has really had an impact on them budget-wise to have three big crashes, have to do three massive rounds of repair. So it's very likely that this will be a consequence later in the season and what they're able to bring in upgrades and what they were planning to do.
Totally. It's such an important point that there isn't some type of crash exception to the cost cap, even if it's totally not the team's fault, even if it's someone else's fault. And for teams that don't – maybe aren't even spending at the budget cap because they don't have those resources, that's super challenging and completely will impact upgrades later in the season.
Yeah, so tough. For Alpine, so to round out some of the last few teams here, Ocon has outqualified Gasly every race this season. So I'm feeling a bit vindicated here with my support of Ocon over the past couple years.
That's good. I'm happy for you, Tiggy.
Yeah, thank you. I know everybody loves Gasly, and I don't dislike Gasly. I like Gasly too, but I do think Ocon's actually really talented. So it's, I guess, he's outqualifying Gasly in like Q3 and Q2, and they're not even getting to Q1, but still something. But just overall, I think like we mentioned in our LVPs, like really rough on pace. There was literally a moment where the team told Ocon to push on the radio and he was like, what do you mean? I'm giving it everything. Like the car just doesn't have it. So more pain for them. Ocon P15, Gasly P16, which is just those cars were just ahead of Logan, like because everyone, the last three DNF'd. So not great.
For Stake or Sauber, Bottas was P14 and Joe was a DNF. Joe was in the pit lane for what seemed like forever until they finally had to retire. Similarly to Alpine, just a bleak situation so far this season for them. I really hope going into Joe's home race that they can hopefully just have a stronger performance, less car and pit lane issues. We'll see. It's Zhou's first time racing in China. It's a huge return to China for F1. So really just fingers crossed. At least it's not a doubleheader. They have some time to get things together. But I really hope it goes okay for them in China.
Zhou needs to call Yuki and be like, bro, how did you do so well at your home race? Like, what are the secrets?
Give me your tips. I'm actually so mad. I messed up with my fantasy team. I tried to have him for 5 races through China, and I think I accidentally only booked him for 4. So I'm dropping him literally right before the Chinese race. I wanted to sell him, hopefully at his peak after China, but sad.
Well, only time will tell if that was the right move, Tiggy. Last team, my favorite midfield team in the entire world. It's also Gunther's birthday today, although I know he's not technically at Haas anymore. But Haas, no points for the race. We had Hülkenberg in P11 and K-Mag in P13. No major mistakes on a bad race for them, but like Yuki just what snuck in there with P10 made them his victim, and they weren't able to capitalize on that. But we love Haas nonetheless. Okay, driver standings. I love doing standings so early in the season because everything will change, I hope.
I feel like that's the opposite of what you've been saying, Chessa. Like the first race, you're like, okay, the constructors is locked in.
Excuse me, correction. I said I love doing driver standings early in the season and constructors will stay the same. Incredible distinction there. The only thing that won't change is Max. He has 77 points and he will continue probably to be P1. We have Checo with 64 and P2. Leclerc at 59, Sainz at 55, love that. Norris at 37, Oscar at 32, Russell 24, Alonso 24, woo, Lewis with 10, and Lance Stroll.
Lawrence Stroll has subbed in for his son in the Aston Martin cockpit. Love that
for
him.
That's
P10. Wow, both Charles and Carlos and Lando and Oscar are so close.
Super close.
Loving it.
Yeah. And Carlos would be ahead of Charles had it not, well, most likely had it not been for the appendix.
That pesky appendix.
For constructors, Red Bull 141, Ferrari 120, McLaren 69, Mercedes 34, Aston Martin 33, 1 point apart. V-Carb 7, Haas 4, and the rest of the teams, nada.
Zilch. Last little bit of news. We've kind of covered a lot of news and what we've already talked about, but rumors of a Vettel comeback. In a press conference this week, Lewis said that like that would be his ideal replacement for him at Mercedes. Tiggy, if Vettel went to Mercedes, would you just perish?
Okay, I have complicated, nuanced, and mixed feelings about this. I love Vettel. I would love to see Vettel on the grid over certain other drivers that we currently have on the grid. I won't name names, but like if you swapped Vettel in for like some of these drivers on the grid, yes, any day. I think that it's time for rookies. I remember this was a very hot take of mine like last season. I was like, Alonso
needs to
retire.
One of the hottest takes ever.
Like all these people need to retire. It's time for fresh blood. And I do feel like
2 years ago.
I feel like I still kind of stand by that to a degree of like, I would love to see Vettel back in racing. Like that would be fun. But I also think there are so many young drivers that deserve a chance and there are so few seats. It's time to develop some new blood. Like, will I be mad if Vettel comes back? No. But would I like to see Liam Lawson? Would I like to see Ollie Berman? Would I like to see Kimi Antonelli? Like, yes, all of the above.
I think we're going to see them all next year.
Next year? 3 rookies next year?
I mean, a girl can dream, right? Okay. Anyways, to wrap it up, because we had the projected rain this weekend, we'll do kind of a fun conundrum around that. Would you rather drive a dry race on wets or a rainy that's a tongue twister. Would you rather drive a dry race on wets or a rainy race on slicks?
Am I allowed to ask a clarifying question?
Ugh. Must you?
Are we talking downpour or a drizzle?
We're talking like wet. We're talking like a wet race.
Like Austria wet. When we were there. With like spray coming up and everything.
This is hard because I think a dry race on wets, you're done for. You're finishing. If it's a dry race and you're on inters, you are finishing P20. No questions asked. You can wear off the tires a bit and get them a little bit less grooved, but still, you're toast. So I think unless you're facing a no spare chassis type situation and absolutely cannot crash, I think you risk it on a rainy race on slicks. And if things dry up, you could be the hero. You never know.
Mic drop.
Sarah's.
So Sarah, if you're in a Williams, you're on. You're doing a dry race on wets.
Yes.
If you're in another car, you're on slicks in a rainy race.
Yes. If you're actually, maybe I would clarify this. If you're in a top team, you're doing a rainy race on slicks. If you're in a team that has either budget cap issues or spare parts issues, you are just driving around in P20 on inters.
I am such a baby. And I'm like, I'm thinking like, this is Chessa's team. Chessa's the driver. I'm a baby. I'm going dry race on wets, hanging out in the back, like no adrenaline, no crashing, nothing. Chilling.
All right. Terrified. I'm going to side with Sarah on this one. If we're an F1 driver, we're going for gold.
That's good. You guys would be much better drivers than me.
Nah. Okay. Thank you all. This was a blast. As a reminder, you can still join us on Grid Arrival for our fantasy league. So head on over there. We're still having a great time and it's fun to trade back and forth. And then another friendly reminder to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. It actually helps us a ton. So thank you all for doing that if you have. And we'll talk to you next week.